रामाय रामभद्राय रामचंद्राय वेदसे रघुनाथाय नाथाय सीताय पतये नमः. युद्धकांड चैप्टर नंबर 18 रामास प्लेज. द रेसिटेशन बिगिंस नाउ. From Vashishtha and the other elders, Sri Rama had heard stories of heroic virtues like those of the dove, Kandu Maharishi and other righteous souls. Hence, his mind was not confused by the objections raised by the Vanaras. The words of Hanuman confirmed and clarified his view, which he made plain. "I too have something to say about Vibhishana," said Rama. "And you, who are interested in my welfare, should listen to it and give me your conclusion. I never forsake one who comes to me as a friend. Even though he has many faults, I shall accept him and the good will not condemn my action." Sugriva fully understood Rama's intention. He was filled with fear about the risk his lord was taking. Because of his love for Raghuvira, he said, "My lord, this Rakshasa may be good and true, or he may not. But in any case, he is ungrateful. He has turned his back upon his brother at the moment of danger and difficulty. Is there anyone whom he will not betray? Lanka, a heap of ashes, his sons dead, his mortal foe crossing the sea, ready to besiege the city. Can Ravana face greater adversity?" Rama smiled and said to himself, "Sugriva speaks thus because he knows not the secret of Dharma, my infinite power and my pledge of protection to those that seek refuge in me." Hence he replied to him according to the rules of kingly polity. He cast his eyes once on the monkey lords around him and addressed himself to Lakshmana, the soul of virtue. "No one can speak thus who has not earnestly studied the scriptures and sat at the feet of good teachers. But in this matter, something very subtle has to be observed. It is seen in all rulers and in the fruit of wide experience. One's next of kin and the ruler of an adjacent country are presumed to be one's enemies. They wait for the hour of danger to do harm. But some good kings trust their next of kin, regard them as friends and well-wishers, and treat them with honor. Even such noble kings may look with suspicion upon this Vibhishana with all his excellence. In this world full of sinners, the best of men fall under suspicion and distrust. It is no wonder then that the wicked Ravana should suspect the righteous Vibhishana. Therefore, he has come here, cutting himself off from his brother. I have explained to you why I think he has turned his back upon Ravana. Now I shall explain why I should not turn him away from me. Some of you have said that it is not safe to take one that has come from the enemy's camp into our own. Now let us go into this matter according to the rule of kingly polity. I am not the brother of Ravana or his next of kin. I have not the slightest desire for his kingdom or possessions. It is Ravana that regards this Rakshasa as his enemy. I entertain no such feeling towards him. Hence, this Rakshasa will never desert me. He but desires to secure the kingdom after the death of Ravana through my hands. He would refrain from doing me any harm, if only for fear that his own purpose may fail. You may ask, do you credit him with such foresight? I answer that there well might be persons of discrimination even among Rakshasas. Hence, he may be admitted among us. Brothers and cousins often do not live in amity and mutual loyalty, and dissensions are natural among them. The Vibhishana feared dire danger from his wicked and mighty brother Ravana, and he has come here for safety. His voice and words reveal this. Therefore, I see no harm in taking him among us. Seldom we find one following the rule that one should obey one's elders even though they are sinful or wicked. Is every younger brother like Bharata, or every son like me, or every friend like you? The kingdom comes to Bharata legitimately thanks to the boon secured by Kaikeyi from Dasharatha. And yet he rejects it, seeks me out in the forest, bows at my feet with utmost reverence and says, "Brother, this kingdom is yours. Come home, wear the crown and rule over us. I shall serve and obey you in all ways." Who but Bharata could act thus? No son in the world is as blessed and fortunate as myself. My father gave up his life, unable to bear the grief of parting from me. Which son has had such a fond and loving father? Even rarer is it for one to have a brother like Bharata and friends like you. During the rainy season, I gave vent to my anger at Sugriva's remissness. Noticing this, Lakshmana pierced the heart of the Monkey King with cruel words. But Sugriva took no offense at all. On the contrary, with boundless love and loyalty, he helps me in every way, and you stand by him all the time. Now, who could have such faithful friends? Sugriva was thus unable to convince Sri Rama through the rules of kingly polity that Vibhishana should be rejected. His heart was troubled that if Vibhishana were admitted before ascertaining his secret intents and purposes, he might work evil to Rama at any time. Blinded by his extreme love for Raghunatha, he thought that the self-surrender of himself and Lakshmana was the best attitude that anyone could adopt towards Sri Rama. He wanted to put away Vibhishana even before the latter took refuge in him. He said, "O Lord, never for a moment should you extend your patience or forbearance towards this Vibhishana. He has come here only at the bidding of Ravana. There is no doubt about it. You should not give him a place in our midst. You should reject him straight away. Cunning and deceitful, Ravana has sent him here to find out our secrets and the right time when he can do us most harm. The moment you place trust in him, he is sure to do some harm to you or to me, and who knows what harm he will do to Lakshmana. Hence, we cannot do better than slay out of hand this Rakshasa and the four counselors accompanying him. There can be no sin in getting rid of the brother of Ravana, that monster of cruelty. Where is his need for making further inquiries?" But finding Rama yet unconvinced, and because of his great love for him, Sugriva gave way to anger. Rama listened and thought, "Alas, it is boundless love of Sugriva that makes him speak these words. He does not know that none in all the worlds can do me any harm, that I am omnipotent, that I am pledged to save everyone that seeks refuge in me. He has to be told that this course of action is laid down in the sacred books and must be followed by me." So Rama replied, "Well, let this Rakshasa be most wicked or let him be virtuous. Either way, what can he do to me? Do you think that he can do any harm to me or to anyone that has taken refuge in me or to anyone that has taken refuge in such a devotee? O mighty ruler of the monkey world, do you imagine that it is you and your monkey armies that stand between me and danger? Know that without giving you the least trouble, I can destroy all the Rakshasas on the earth, as also the Danavas, the Yakshas and Pisachas, and all other creatures, merely with the tip of my little finger, if I so choose. I need no weapons. Nay, the other fingers need not even help. Even of the little finger, the tip is enough. Why speak of these puny Rakshasas of Lanka? The thought of slaying them has not yet entered my mind. When it does, these Rakshasas will no more be seen. Therefore, you need not dream that any harm can come to me from this Vibhishana. Granted that he can harm me and that I might lose my life, even then, I will not turn him away from me. I will save him. In this connection, let me tell you a well-known story. Once upon a time, there dwelt a pair of doves in the forest. One day, a fowler came to the spot and caught in a snare the female bird. Night came on and darkness enveloped the world. A great wind blew and it rained hard. Sorely buffeted, The fowler wandered here and there for shelter, and hungry and tired, he came by chance to the foot of the very tree where the male bird was. The dove noticed the misery of the fowler and thought of helping him. Yet it held back because he was a natural foe of its species. Then the female bird, held captive in the hunter's net, said to her mate, "My dear, waste no thought on me. I have been caught in this fowler's nest. There is only one thing that should occupy your mind. This man has come to our dwelling. He is our guest. Rain, cold, darkness, and hunger afflict him. If we now fail to give him the welcome due to a guest, the pure and righteous life we have been leading till now would be wasted." Now the bird on the tree did not belong to the Brahmana or the Kshatriya or the Vaishya caste. It was not bound like a man to observe the duties of the various orders of society, nor was it a man who could at least put in practice the ordinary rules of good life. It was but a bird. A fowler was the natural enemy of its species, had caught its mate in his nest, and in few moments he would make a meal of her. Indeed, if he helped the hunter now, he too would be killed and eaten. Further, the hunter had not sought his help, nor taken refuge in him, nor had he come there by choice, seeking the dove's dwelling place. By accident, he had come to the foot of the tree, and placing his joined palms over his head, said, "O guardian deity of this tree, I seek refuge in you." Even so, the dove looked on the fowler as a god and entertained him with reverence. It flew hither and thither, gathered a heap of twigs and dried leaves, lit a fire and provided warmth for the fowler. It brought him what fruits and roots it could get at that time. But he saw that the hunter's hunger could not be satisfied. As it was the custom to propitiate the gods by offering sacrifices in the fire, and as he could not find any other meat, and considering that it would be improper to harm any other creature while his own body was available, he threw his body into the fire that he had kindled and prayed to the fowler to satisfy his hunger. Thus, the dove found a place for himself in the bright worlds on high. Now this bird was all alone, while we have countless vulnerable warriors to help us. The fowler was the born enemy of the dove, while Vibhishana is no foe. The fowler caught the female dove, while it was not Vibhishana who took away my wife. Nay, if Ravana himself came and sought refuge in me, I ought to protect him even at the cost of my life, as a dove protected his enemy. The fowler did not seek refuge with the dove. Here Vibhishana has sought refuge in me. Though he has come from my enemy's camp, he is not my enemy. One of my ancestors, Raghu by name, extended his protection to a Rakshasa, as the story goes. Perhaps this Vibhishana has heard of it and has come to me seeking protection. The dove extended all the rites of hospitality to the fowler and brought comfort and satisfaction to him by giving up his own life. We, on the contrary, are seeking cruel ways of punishing Vibhishana. Nay, we would slay not only him, but also those who have come with him. The dove knew that the fowler was his relentless foe and had done him grievous harm. So he welcomed the hunter with kind words. Free from anger or hatred, he entertained his guest with an open hand and a warm heart. As the books say, a guest must be attended to until his hunger is appeased. We, on the contrary, have conclusively taken for our enemy whose conduct are those of a good friend. Moreover, we are planning to speak falsely to him, to deceive him, and visit him with dire punishment. The ignorant love the body as themselves. The wise, on the other hand, look upon the body as an instrument for the practice of virtue. This dove disregarded the body altogether and, like the Maharishi Sharbhanga, offered it up cheerfully, considering this a great spiritual act. It was not born like me in a class where one is entitled to practice dharma. It was not born like me in the line of the Kshivakus who are pledged to offer protection to all that seek it. By birth and nature, the fowler was base. That night he was homeless and helpless. His heart knew no pity, no kind word ever passed his lips. And yet the dove entertained him, even this wretch, and that at the cost of his own life. In the far past, a bird came down from the heavens to test the heart of Emperor Shibi. Now, this dove was no such god in disguise. It is an ordinary bird. Like the elephant king rescued by the Lord, it walked on the path of highest righteousness owing to the merit it had laid up in former births. Now let this be. One day, a hunter chased by a tiger came to the foot of a lofty tree. There was a monkey among its branches, and the hunter sought refuge with the animal and was given a place on the tree. The tiger came there and, finding the monkey fast asleep, said to the hunter, "The monkey sleeping there is nothing to you. Throw him down to me. I shall make a meal of him and go away without doing you any harm." The hunter, treacherous by nature, trusted the words of the tiger. To save his own dear life, he pushed down the monkey. The tiger caught a hold of the monkey and said, "Go up again, kill the hunter who betrayed you." But the monkey knew somewhat of right and wrong. He acted as if he was willing to save himself by throwing the hunter down to the tiger. When he was safe once more among the branches, he forgave the hunter for his treachery, calmed his fear that he would take revenge, kept watch over him till the day broke, and saw him safe from that place. A common monkey extended his protection to a man who was ready to betray him to death. Is it not surprising then that you, the son of the Lord of Day and the king of all Vanaras, refuse to follow the duty of protecting one who seeks refuge, the duty observed by one of your own clan? I am a man born in the line of Raghu. My father was King Dashrath, who had grown old in ruling his subjects righteously for 60,000 years. From Vishwamitra, Vasishtha, and other great sages, I have learned the mysteries of Dharma. I am connected by marriage with King Janaka, the master of desireless action. People call me Rama, the incarnation of Dharma. I have laid down the rules of conduct for all. I must practice them aright. I must show others the way. Now, if I, even I, were to inflict pain on one who has taken refuge in me, where is a limit to the evil that men may do? Ravana may, if he likes, condemn to death those that do not deserve this fate. But how can one like me ever dream of it? I know not to what species one belongs who forsakes the man who seeks sanctuary. But you may say, the dove had not studied the Shastras. It is not proper that merely to follow the dove's example and no other reason we should do the same. Let me place before you the words of Maharishi Kandu, the son of the great Rishi Kanva. He comes of a noble race. He knows the truth of things and he speaks truly the truth he knows. His words are those of a well-meaning friend and they are supported by holy scriptures. They are not the product of his fancy. As the hymns of the Rig Veda are transformed into those of the Samaveda by a change of note, even so, sage Kandu but formulates the dharma that has no beginning. He who lives up to his words reaps the rich reward that awaits him who follows the dharma taught in the Veda. His counsel is pregnant with many meanings, easy to remember and succinct. You have not heard it and hence a confusion in your mind. The seeker for refuge need not feel friendly towards the protector nor express friendship in word or conduct. He need not be endowed with all the excellences that the doctrine of refuge demands of the seeker. It is quite enough that the supplicant should join his palms in prayer as a gesture of surrender. Grace descends on him at once and all sorrow fall away. One sure, swift means to secure the Lord's blessing is joining one's palms in prayer. How can it fail to control the Lord who is bound and given over to the hands of his devotees? Even if one does not join the palms in prayer, it is enough if one announces that one is helpless and needs help, or if one utters words that sound like prayer. Even if these three elements are absent, turning in the direction of the Savior is enough. Let the supplicant be our direct foe, yet we may not harm him. As ahimsa is the highest virtue, so compassion is the essence of all dharma and must be preserved. What is gained by parading our valor before one who seeks sanctuary? Should we not rather be valiant before our enemies? He who seeks our help may give way to anger that his desire is not fulfilled at once. He may be in the grip of fear at the thought of his faults. He may be intent upon securing his purpose without caring whether it is now or later. He may be proud and unbending at the very moment of taking refuge, or impenitent for his former sins. He may be disgusted with life and eager to free himself from the bondage of the body. He may long for liberation as the effects of his karma have come to an end. He may be powerless and helpless and know not where else to go. He may utter the words, "I surrender," in jest or in deceit. He may utter the words with hatred in his heart. In every case, it is the duty of one who has faith in the code of dharma and who has a steadfast mind to give up his fleeting life breaths, if need be, and gain the eternal merit of saving the supplicant. Failing in this duty, the wise man commits a blacker sin than the common man. So one should stand between a broken man and his sorrow, even at the cost of one's body, wealth, and life. Whether from fear of harm from the supplicant or from his comrades, whether from ignorance of law or from the hope of some gain from the supplicant's foe, whatever the cause, if one fails in his duty of protection, one incurs the scorn of all men here and forfeits all chance of salvation hereafter. Not only this, when one can but does not save the supplicant and watches his suffering and death at the hands of his enemies, one loses all the merit one has accumulated till then, and it passes to the seeker of refuge. Heavy and heinous is the sin of failing to help the supplicant for protection. It leads one to hell. It brings one infamy and dishonor on earth. It saps one's strength and prowess. I shall tread the path of Maharishi Kandu. I have pledged myself to establish dharma on earth, and I am bound to act in accordance with it. All beings will commend this course of action, which destroys sin and assures one a place in heaven. The seeker after the highest perfection has to practice repeatedly the other means prescribed by the books, but not so with the method of surrender. It is quite enough if the surrender of self is made to me but once. Even that, it is not necessary to express it in word or by act. Submission with the mind will do. Let a man but think once, "I am yours. Service to you is my sole reward." This prayer is enough. I shall then stand between him and any evil that threatens from any being. This is my pledge. Never and in no circumstance will this be broken. This gift of fearlessness I give to those who come with him who seek refuge in me. As Rama spoke, Sugriva's suspicion was at an end. His face shone clear. Trust and faith in Vibhishna filled his heart. Then Sri Rama said to him, "Sugriva, this Vibhishna took you as his intercessor with me and prayed to you to announce to me his arrival here. He desired your help to bring him to me. Now, if you go yourself and bring him here, the grievous sin of making him wait so long would be wiped away. Of all the Vanaras who love me, you are the dearest to me. Vibhishna, forsaking kith and kin, has declared before us his helplessness. I, who hold that show of friendship is enough for me, have given him sanctuary the very moment he said, 'I surrender.' Do you hesitate, wondering, 'How shall I go to him and invite him here?' I, who doubted him and stood in his way. It is no great thing that we offer protection to Vibhishna, for he is righteous. It would be something if we freed fear from Ravana the cruel. If we save Vibhishana, we save with him only the four Rakshasas that have accompanied him. But if we save Ravana, we would save along with him the entire Rakshasa race. That would indeed be an immense gain. Do you not share whatever glory and happiness may come to me? Why do you entertain such doubts about Vibhishana? Why, if Ravana himself should come to me straight and without restoring Sita, pray for my protection, I am prepared to grant it to him. If this is not Vibhishana, but Ravana in disguise, even then I would give him sanctuary. Do not come and tell me that this is not Vibhishana, but Ravana himself. Whoever it is, bring him quickly here. Hearing this, Sugriva marveled at the supreme love that Sri Rama had for himself and Vibhishana that took refuge in him. Rama disregarded every fault of his. He pacified his old comrades who had so long opposed his wishes. He argued with them and convinced them that he was right. And he was even ready to receive Ravana if he came. Such is the love of the Supreme Lord. The Vanara King, amazed at Rama's infinite goodness, said, Rama, when one thinks of the endless auspicious qualities that are yours by nature, one ceases to wonder at your action. Knowing the mysteries of Dharma, you extend your protection to all your myriad servants. You are ever intent upon making others happy, desiring nothing for yourself. It becomes you and you alone to speak and act thus. You have too the omnipotence to perform what you promise. You have taken birth among men only to establish the reign of Dharma. Any one of your countless excellences is quite enough by itself to save those who seek sanctuary in you. No wonder your grace becomes limitless when all these excellences are found together and harmoniously combined. You may say, why praise me? Only if you are satisfied in mind, we should accept Vibhishana. Even if I said that this Rakshasa must be cruelly punished, I know in my heart that he is innocent. There are other weighty reasons for a noble action. I now recognize the pure motives that impelled Vibhishana to come to us. The arguments of Maruti and yourself, the gait, the dress, the words and expression of Vibhishana, these have convinced me. I have sinned heavily by distrusting Vibhishana in my ignorance. Now that the truth is known, let not a single moment be lost in granting his prayer. He prayed to us, cruel, suspicious creatures, to intercede with you on his behalf. And you, O my Lord, have taken all this trouble only to secure for us the name and fame of being intercessors for Vibhishana. Let the newcomer Vibhishana soon find a place among your devotees and serve you to his utmost. Sugriva prayed that Vibhishana should attain the highest bliss that any creature can hope for. He also wished that he and his comrades should attain the bliss of being the friends of this great new devotee of Sri Rama. Lord, he prayed, this devotee who knows the means to attain the bliss supreme, let him be our friend. Then the king of the Vanaras went to Vibhishana and cried, O most fortunate of mortals, forgive us this long delay. Raghuvira has granted you the sanctuary you sought. Fear no more. He has bidden us to bring you to him. Rama listened. He has pushed aside the obstacles raised by the monkey warriors in the way of his grace. He has pledged his protection to the seeker. He will brook no more delay. What would happen if, perchance, Sugriva were to change his mind again? Hence, even as Indra welcomed Garuda with open arms, he advanced with alacrity to welcome Vibhishana and accept him as his own. Mangalam Kushlendraya Mahaniya Gunapte Chakravarti Dhanurjaya Sarva Bhaumaya Mangalam.